Hello and welcome to the Library Cafe. I'm Thomas Hill. Today I'm delighted to have back as a guest on the show Patricia Fagan, Philip and Lynn Strauss Curator of Prints and Drawings at the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center here at Vassar, who will be discussing her exhibition currently on view at the center through June 29th entitled Mastering Light from the Natural to the Artificial. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks so much for inviting me again.
Sure. This is your third time on the show now?
I think so. That's right.
It must be your radio voice.
So
it must
be the
Georgia accent.
It's that yes, Georgia accent, yeah.
So this is an exhibition that you assembled, and it's an exhibition of works mainly owned by Vassar?
Yes. Most of the works do come from the permanent collection at Vassar. I have supplemented the collection since there were a few gaps that needed to be filled, and so I have borrowed five things. One painting from the Museum of Modern Art, and that's the Joseph Stella Battle of Lights. And then also borrowed a wonderful Thomas Rowlandson satirical etching, which has these images of the first gas streetlights in London. And that's just a wonderful print to see. And also I borrowed two daguerreotypes, which are rather beautiful. And then one photograph that is of Venice. But most of the works do come from the permanent collection, and it's a show that we organized at the Art Center.
Yeah, and most of the stars at the show, except for perhaps the Stella, are our own works. So,
Yes. The Munch painting and Rembrandt prints and the Curran shadow decoration. You know, there's just so many.
So light seems to be a theme of interest for a number of exhibitions lately. There's currently a photography show, I know, at Scandinavia House called Darkness and Light across from Grand Central Station. The Palazzo Grazzi has a show called Illusion of Light on at the moment. And MoMA, too, has a photography show of Bill Brandt's works that they call Shadow and Light. But I wondered, is light for some reason something that people are thinking about now?
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly seems to be in the atmosphere now. Back in 2000, there was this very large show of paintings and prints and drawings, and I believe also photographs, too, of works with the theme of light. And that was at the Carnegie in Pittsburgh. And that really seems to have started this series of shows on light. I think a couple of years ago now, there was a show on electric light in Paris. And the works by Impressionists and Post-Impressionists in prints and paintings. And that was organized by the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown. And there have been several shows. And, you know, it just seems to be this area of study that is kind of new and novel for many curators.
Yeah, and then, of course, there are artists who use light as a medium, and you haven't included that approach in the show. Your material is all renderings of light.
Right,
Terrell, you know.
And then Dan Flavin. No, I stop in the early 20th century.
So can you talk about what gave you the idea for the show and about the work or the process that goes into putting up an exhibition like this, you know, from your perspective as a curator, just to give people some idea of the kind of work you do?
Oh, sure. Well, actually, the idea for the show was a group effort.
Collaborative.
Yes. Since I had wanted to do a show that had to do with the beautiful light that you see in old master paintings. And we have several of those in the collection. And I presented that to our working group on shows. But what was suggested instead was an exhibition that really looked at light in this kind of 360-degree manner. And so I took up the challenge, and this was about 2 years ago that we all met. And so the result is the show that you see at the Art Center. So what I did was to go through our database. Mm-hmm. We have, about 6,000 drawings and 6,000 prints and thousands of paintings. Mm-hmm. And so I went through all of those pictures that we had in the database, flagging those that I thought were really strong, mm-hmm. and that said something. And so then I looked at all of those pictures that I had flagged and then chose the strongest ones. And then I went to the painting screens and looked at the paintings, mm-hmm. one by one, you know, just to see, you know, perhaps there was something I really missed,
yeah,
you know.
The painting screens are the storage area you have in the basement,
exactly,
of the loan
where
paintings are stored on chain link fence, sort of.
Yeah, and so I found several works down there. What I wanted to do was to have a show where I combined paintings, mm-hmm. with prints and drawings and photographs. Mm-hmm. Since I am the curator of prints and drawings, but I dearly love paintings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you ever feel a bit, when you're selecting materials like this for this kind of a show, because I notice so many works come to the surface that you might not have ordinarily seen, that
yes.
if it's a show about, say, named artists, you go to the Met, you go to MoMA, you tend to see things you expect to see and that you've seen before. But in a show like this, all sorts of things come to the surface that you haven't seen. And do you ever feel when you're pulling out the screens or going through looking at materials, mm-hmm. a bit like a casting director, you know, auditioning actors, wondering if, you know, you can fit this person with all this talent into this particular production because they deserve to be seen?
Right,
do
yes.
they call out to you, you know, pick me as your...
Yes, you know. Well, good. No, the work had to be really bold, mm-hmm. you know, visually bold,
yeah.
and it had to mean something in terms of light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so there were some paintings that I was not that familiar with,
mm-hmm.
and they look great.
Yeah, they do. I have to say, your shows always look wonderful. I mean, just visually,
oh, well,
the way
you.
They're composed, the way they're selected. There's something, you know, aesthetically, apart from the subject interest, they always strike me that way. So
that probably has to do with me being a studio major in college.
Oh, does it? Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, there
yes.
is something to,
yes.
you know, selecting and arranging materials that
yes.
is, it's a type of collage or assemblage, isn't it?
Well, it really is.
Yeah.
It really
yeah.
is.
So, and then other people, of course, contribute to this kind of thing behind the scenes, don't they? There's a lot of work
absolutely.
That goes into mounting a show like this.
Yes, I got a lot of support from our director, James Mundy,
mm-hmm.
and I got a lot of hands-on support from Joanne Potter, mm-hmm. the collections manager and registrar, and also Bruce Bundock, who actually put up the show. You
yeah.
know, he put the nails in the wall,
yeah.
you know, that kind of thing. And a lot of students.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had about 8 or 10 students working on the show. Yeah, so that was really great.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful to have students participate.
Yeah, so it is a bit like a theatrical production, and you know, it really is a collaboration of lots of people doing something.
Very much so. Yeah. And then Margaret Vitaire is the education mm-hmm. person, and she was very much involved, and she still is, mm-hmm. you know, in different activities. And the Office of Communications here, they wrote the press release from the essay that, mm-hmm. that I wrote. And then they have been working with the press
mm-hmm.
About the show. And the catalog that comes with the show was designed by George Laws
mm-hmm.
in the Office of Communications. And the catalog actually started out to be a brochure,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, with
yeah.
I just kept on yeah. writing.
Yeah. Well, one of the purposes of an exhibition in an art museum is documentation, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, apart from bringing the works of art out so people can see them, as an art librarian, I can say a great deal of what we know about works of art comes from curators and people who assemble exhibitions, doing exhibition catalogs and then researching the pieces that go into the exhibition.
Right, yes, and that's what happened with this show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great. So The subtitle of the show, From the Natural to the Artificial, sets up the way you organize works in the exhibit. And I thought we might just follow that organization. And that flow starts with natural light and then goes on to artificial light. So can we talk about the works that fall under the natural light heading that you start with, maybe starting with Durer's engraving of St. Jerome?
Oh, certainly. That is such a beautiful impression. You have Durer, who was a virtuoso engraver. He has placed St. Jerome, who was a 4th century scholar and translator, in this 15th century German interior. And the artist has these pools and flows of light that come through these beautiful crown glass windows. And so you have the reflections of the rounded crown glass, and you have these pools of light that are on the ceiling and on the floor. It really is just a beautiful print. And one wonders if the light was meant to be metaphorical, since St. Jerome was translating the Bible from Hebrew and Greek into everyday spoken Latin. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of function, it's really breaking open a new kind of area. And it really does seem to have to do with this kind of illumination, just like the light coming through really does seem to connect with that idea. Durer was very interested in theories of light that were current during the Italian Renaissance. Mm-hmm. He was probably very much inspired by what Leonardo was, since he was working on these theories of light. And Durer brought the Italian Renaissance to Germany and was very much inspired by what was going on, you know, the ideas and art theory in Italy.
So other works that have to do with natural light, there's a Rembrandt print. You have several Rembrandt in the show dealing with various parts of parts of your organization, but one is a study of natural light, and it also is a depiction of someone reading, interestingly, by a window.
Yes, yeah, and here you also seem to have this idea of illumination. This is a really beautiful portrait of Jan Six by Rembrandt, and it really is this kind of dark, smoky room with Jan Six leaning on the windowsill and this brilliant light lighting him and lighting him reading, too. And Jan Six was a poet and a writer. And this also seems to have that connotation of learning, of, you know, someone learning, this kind of illumination that happens. In 17th century Dutch art, you really do see this dichotomy of brilliant light through windows and someone reading or reflecting or looking at a globe, you know, or, you know, just thinking or playing music. And so that really does seem to be a major theme in 17th century Dutch art.
Yeah, the way light works in interiors coming
That's
through windows.
Right. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And shadow, of course, is very important, especially to Rembrandt. He really is a master of light and shadow, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
Painting and engraving also.
Certainly. This is a really beautiful impression. It's one of the nicest that I've ever seen. So I think people would enjoy seeing it.
Yeah, when you see a fresh, really fresh impression like that in a print, it is very striking, isn't it? Because usually you don't. I mean, unless it's a contemporary print.
Right, yeah. So this means that the etching plate, the copper plate that Rembrandt worked on, those lines had not really begun to flatten.
Yeah,
and so you still have that freshness that you would have early on.
Yeah. One of the, I think, sort of hinge pieces of the show depicting the portrayal of natural light is a work from our own collection, and it's a favorite of visitors to the Loeb Center, I know, is Charles Courtney Curran's painting, A Shadow Decoration.
Yeah, that... That is such a beautiful, beautiful painting. It depicts a young woman. She looks like she's a laundress, and she's hanging out a sheet. And she's hanging out a sheet in this brilliant sunlight. And there's a sheet right in front of her with this wonderful pattern of shadows from the tree that looks like it's directly behind the sheet. And so here Curran combines this sense of realism as well as he shows this interest in the patterning that you often see in Japanese prints, you know, with shadow patterns. And two, the sunlight that you see here is so brilliant. I think he was very much inspired about what was going on in French art, in European art in the 1880s, you know, with Impressionism and with that emphasis on the importance of the sun.
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't an impressionist piece, though, quite, is it?
No.
There's a realism about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful thing that is. Easy to see why it is a favorite. And you've used it for the cover of the catalog.
Yeah, I used it for the cover and also for the banner.
Outside.
Yeah, exactly.
Another piece depicting light is Clarence Chatterton's Gathering in a Park. And I wonder if you could talk about Chatterton, because it's always seemed to me he ought to be a household word among people at Vassar, because he taught here for so many years. But, you know, he's kind of obscured in favor of people like Van Ingen, after whom a building is named. And
Well, he taught at Vassar from about 1915 to, I think, around 1948. Mm-hmm. So he taught art, specifically painting and drawing. And he was a great friend of Edward Hopper, who, of course, is supremely well known. Mm-hmm. But Chatterton went to the New York School of Art and was a student under Robert Henry, you know, who was like the father of the Ashcan School. And he was also a student of William Merritt Chase, who was very much inspired by the Impressionists and by the light and kind of dashing quality of much of the Impressionist painting. So Gathering in a Park is this very sunny view of women clothed in their summer whites with sun umbrellas, and girls in their whites as well, and men in their straw hats. And they're all out on a lawn and enjoying this game that's going on in the background. And so here, what Chatterton has done, it's like he has put this sunny kind of spirit onto this American scene subject matter. He was very much an artist of the American scene, and that happened before really the American scene came to be called that. Yeah, but he was an artist who was very interested in what was going on in street scenes, in leisure scenes, and he really did fuse that with this love of light.
You can get lost in it, standing in front of it, and something absorbing about it. Moving on to illumination at night, both natural and artificial, there are two more important contributions to the exhibit by Rembrandt. One of them has to do with natural light at night, starlight.
Yes. Well, we have the angel appearing to the shepherds.
Yes.
And that is a really beautiful nocturnal etching by Rembrandt. And it was his first nocturnal etching and his largest one. And that print is really so large, and he did it so early that some people think that that print was like a calling card for Rembrandt, you know, saying, here, this is what I can do, because this was like a virtuoso print. You have an angel who is up in the clouds with Putti, and they are all in this kind of burst of light, you know, perhaps supernatural light. And the angel is looking down at the shepherds who are very frightened and they're running away. Mm-hmm. But this is just a striking nighttime scene. It really is, and it's so interesting to know that all of those blacks and darks that are in this print were done with etching, you know, with layers and layers of cross-hatching.
Yeah.
But it's really a striking nighttime scene.
Yeah, it has a moonlit quality, doesn't it?
It's just really beautiful, just beautiful.
Yeah. And then he has another print. You have another print in the show by Rembrandt depicting artificial light.
Right, yeah. We do have the Adoration of the Shepherds, mm-hmm. where there is a very small oil lamp mm-hmm. that provides the illumination.
Yeah.
And actually, there is the Star of the King.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. So
right.
There are two, actually,
yeah,
in that show.
Yeah.
Artificial light, yeah.
Yeah, and so the Star of the Kings shows these children who have this very large star mm-hmm. that they carry with them.
It's made out of paper, I think.
Paper or...
With a candle inside.
Probably, yeah. With a little candle inside. And so they're going to try to beg for money mm-hmm. from different people, you know, their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have the candle. You also have the oil lamp. And those were two of the major ways that people had or used, you know, this kind of light that was man-made.
Yeah. There's another Vassar-related piece in the show, James Buckley's Netley Abbey by Torchlight.
Yeah, that's a beautiful watercolor. Mm. And what it shows is this romantic scene with the moon in the distance, and it's a full moon, slightly yellow, but the light is permeating this view of the ruins of Netley Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you have two figures who are there in front of the ruins, and that appears to be the artist, James Buckley, mm-hmm. and he's sitting down and sketching. And so he's looking up at a figure who looks like the Reverend Elias Lyman Magoon,
mm-hmm.
who was a Vassar trustee, and he was also an art collector, and he likely commissioned that watercolor by Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, so many of our British drawings and watercolors and so many of our Hudson River school paintings came from Dr. Magoon, who sold his collection mm-hmm. to Matthew Vassar to form the original collection at Vassar College.
Yeah, interesting. A big chunk of the architecture exhibit now up in the library, but also a piece of it in the Loeb Center, are of materials given by Magoon to the college on its foundation, architecture books as well as paintings.
Exactly. Sometimes he commissioned, mm-hmm. you know, this Hudson River School painting, so it's just great to see.
Yeah, that I didn't know. And the Buckley piece is a romantic piece, really, isn't it?
Right,
almost classic romantic.
Well, yes, and so the moonlight there really does give the work this quality of reverie, you know, and a little bit of introspection, as so many romantic works with the moonlight kind of seeping through, you know, flowing through the landscape do.
And then another hinge piece in the exhibit involving artificial light is Edvard Munch's Ascent at St. Cloud.
That's right. Yeah, that is a really... really beautiful painting.
Yeah.
It's blue, you mm-hmm. know, blue with a little bit of
purple,
a little bit of lilac, and
not usually Munch's palette, is
no,
it?
No. This was done really fairly early, mm-hmm. just after he had been at art school in Paris, and so when he found out about his father dying, he was, of course, just heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to leave Paris, and he went to this Paris suburb, and there really came up with this new way of painting. He came up with this manifesto where he said that he didn't want to paint with facts.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to paint with emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really comes across in this blue and purple painting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those colors, plus this very kind of open and bare foreground, seem to have this, you know, this kind of quality that is very empty.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, there's a bare tree. And,
a bare tree.
That's very much an urban landscape.
Very much.
With a bridge, he seems to be partial to bridges. Always has been.
He does. He does. Yeah. And then just beyond this foreground, you do see these lights that are lit. And those are probably street lights, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. there on or near the bridge. And then also you have this this boat that you see, and it's all lit up. That might be kerosene light, since kerosene lamps were very popular.
Can you talk about what these works have to tell us about the different kinds of lighting technology that were developed and are used? I mean, can the works in the exhibition be used to tell us anything about the history of light? That's the question, I suppose.
Well, yeah. And I spent a great deal of research time on the history of the different technologies, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm an art historian and a curator. I'm not really a historian of lighting, but I did learn a great deal. For instance, the Thomas Rowlandson mm-hmm. print that does show those first gas street lights
yeah.
in London. And here he has all of these Londoners who are, I mean, it's really a great deal of people mm. who are out here in front of Carlton House, the home of the Prince of Wales. And they're all talking about these new lights and how the new lights will affect them. So you do have artists who are fascinated by the new lighting. Mm-hmm. And so it's really very interesting to be an art historian and see these artists being responsive,
yeah.
you know, to different lighting effects. You have Edward Hopper in the early 20th century who, in Night Shadows, a beautiful etching by him.
Mm-hmm.
In this etching, you have this very lonely, small figure who's traipsing across a brilliantly lighted sidewalk, and the light is from this brilliant, probably some kind of electric light mm-hmm. and perhaps a brilliant arc light. But that kind of glare that
yeah.
you get here really has this alienating effect.
Yeah.
You know?
If you've ever seen arc light, that is what it looks like. There's something so incredibly stark about it.
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly.
It's a sort of yellowish, very brilliant light.
And then, too, you have early 20th century artists who are inspired by seeing these big gatherings of lights. I'm thinking of Coney Island's Luna Park,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, you end with a Stella image of Coney Island. And Coney Island was really something, wasn't it? When it was first opened, just as a spectacle in terms of light, incandescent light, I don't know that there was anything like it. This was before neon, too.
Yeah, Joseph Stella, mm-hmm. he was struck mm-hmm. by seeing all of the many lights that decorated the fantastic rides and buildings there at Luna Park. And there were thousands and thousands and thousands of these lights, and they were fairly new mm-hmm. because these light bulbs had been developed by Edison only, I think, in the early 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have so many fairs, like the different world fairs mm-hmm. from then on, and then these amusement parks like Luna Park,
yeah.
where these lights are really celebrated, and they do point to this kind of modernism,
yeah.
you know?
Amusement parks have that aura about them, sort of
they
generally,
do.
They do, don't they, per se, because maybe, I don't know, the technology that goes into making everybody happy, their utopian places.
That's right,
you know,
exactly, fantasy.
Yeah.
fantasy places.
Yes. That's a great piece. Is that a painting, Joseph Stella?
Yes, that is a painting, and it's round. Mm-hmm. It's the work that I borrowed from the Museum of Modern Art. Yeah. We really did not have this kind of painting in our collection, and I thought that this section of the show really needed something.
It has a Tondo-esque air about it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Almost mosaic-like.
Yes.
And it is round. I mean, it does sort of punctuate like a big period at the end of the show.
And it's right next to the film that we have.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
The film is by the Thomas Edison Company. Mm-hmm. And it's this wonderful black and white silent film of the outside during the day and at night of buildings in 1901 mm-hmm. at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
And so at night, it's this magical moment. Mm-hmm. You know, at night you have this wonderful film of darkness, but it's all punctuated by these brilliant lights.
Yeah.
And searchlights, too. Mm-hmm. So you have lights kind of slashing through lights.
Yeah.
You know, it's really very moving.
Yeah. You don't see searchlights anymore in cities, do you, the
no,
way you used
you
to?
Don't.
When I was a child, when you know, we would play outside after dark at night. And every night, you know, you'd see them, you know, scanning the clouds
as an advertisement.
Yeah, it was. It was part of the whole world of lights. And, of course, the streetlights were really something, too, to children playing outside. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see what you were doing out there. But
that's right.
Yeah. And you have daguerreotypes you mentioned in the show also.
Yes, we have two daguerreotypes in the show, and we borrowed those from Michael Mattis and mm-hmm. Judith Hochberg. They have this really fabulous collection of daguerreotypes and other kind of photographs. And then we borrowed that one print. It's an albumen print of Venice.
Wow.
And so that goes very nicely with this 19th century watercolor of Venice by mm-hmm. Edward Lear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it worked out well.
Oh, great. So great show. So, and it'll be up through June 29th, so there's plenty of time to come see it. And what are you working on now for the fall?
Well, yes, for the fall, I'm working on a show that is organized by the National Gallery of Art in mm-hmm. Washington. And so I'm the in-house curator for mm-hmm. that show. It's almost 100 works, drawings and prints and medals and armor. So that should be really quite interesting. And the theme of that is art from Imperial Augsburg mm-hmm. in Germany, since Augsburg was such a center for imperial projects, you know, by Maximilian.
Yeah.
So, and this was back in the early 16th century.
Oh, great. So we'll have you back when that comes up. And
there's
a companion show at the same time on the Nuremberg Chronicles in the library.
I think that'll be very nice.
Yeah, I should. Looking forward to it. So I'd like to thank you, Patty, for visiting with us today on the Library Cafe to talk about your show, Mastering Light, From the Natural to the Artificial.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thank you.